Roger, would you check that the thermostats are at 68?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Good. I hope the roads weren't too bad and our parking lot wasn't too slippery. This is winter. So we are ready. Om namo brahmarebhyo brahmavidya sampradaya kartrubhyo vamsharshibhyo mahadbhyo namo gurubhyah shruti smriti purananam halayam karunalayam namami bhagavatparam shankaram loka shankaram Sadashiva-samarambham Shankaracharya-madhyamam Asmadacharya-paryantam Vande Guru-paramparam Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavambararayanam Sutra-bhashakratau Vande Bhagavantau Punah-punah Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Gocharam Tamagocharam Govindam Paramanandam Satgurum Pranatosmyaham. Good. Welcome back. We'll continue our study of Viveka Chudamani. In the prior class, remember we were going through a sequence of seven questions? So the first four questions are complete now. Kaha anatma, what is anatma, was our first. Ko atma, what is kaha atma, what is atma, was the second of the questions. The third, ko nama bandha, what is that which we call bondage? If one has an enemy in life, you better know something about your enemy. Bandha is a source of suffering. So we've just concluded in a prior class our inquiry into what is the nature of bondage. And in that discussion, two things from the prior verse just to point out, which are very important. If you remember, the very important discussion, bondage. The question, ko nama bandha, what is it that we call bondage? And it went on in some length, but basically we could summarize it by saying, bondage is identification due to ignorance. That's a summary of the prior verse. Identification due to ignorance. Now that's a very compact statement. Identification means what? Taking yourself as a body, mind, senses, etc. And that identification takes place due to failure to recognize your true nature as Satchitananda-atma. Failing to recognize the inner fullness and completeness, you identify with yourself with the limitations of the body, mind, and senses. And the limitations is what causes the problem. If you had a perfect body and a perfect mind, would identification with the body and mind lead to suffering? Of course not. But the fact is no body is perfect, and most certainly no mind is free from problems. So therefore, when we identify with the body and mind, we acquire the problems of the body and mind, which are not our problems. So we've discussed this on several occasions. The problems are out there. If the problems are out there, you can be okay. But if the problems are you, if you become the problem, you're stuck. And that is bondage. So bondage, to summarize a prior verse, identification due to ignorance, ajnana. Okay, so that being said, that's the third question, ko nama bandha. The fourth question, oh sorry, this is back here, with verse 139. And the fourth question was, katam esha agataha, katam how, esha, this bondage, eshaha bandaha. How did this bondage agataha, how did it come? That was a question we saw long ago. How did we get in this miserable condition? And there is, before we see what the verse is, we should point out something. There is some strange misinterpretation. Not many people have this, but I've heard it from time to time. And that is, people speak in terms of falling into a state of ignorance, falling into samsara, getting caught up in this condition of transmigration, birth and rebirth and rebirth. And the problem with that kind of approach is, if you fell into it, it means you weren't in it before. Which means, if being in bondage is due to ignorance, you fall into ignorance. If you fall into ignorance, you're falling from what into ignorance? You're falling from knowledge into a state of ignorance? Is that possible? Absolutely not. There is no falling into a state of ignorance. There's no falling into this condition. There's no, sometimes we'll say, oh, you forgot your true nature in some prior life. You know, I have a suspicion. I don't know this for a fact. But this kind of teaching, that we fell into ignorance, or there was a state of perfection and that we've slipped from that state of perfection, to me, that sounds suspiciously like a biblical teaching, where Adam and Eve were in a state of perfection in Eden, and then they fell from that state of perfection into human mortality. So Hinduism is not immune to being affected by external forces, and it is possible that this incorrect teaching, that we have fallen from a state of perfection into a state of ignorance, it's possible that such a teaching is actually the result of biblical influence on the Hindu tradition. It's absolutely not what the ancient rishis taught. What they taught, and what Sri Shankara points out very brilliantly, and we'll see that in this verse, in this coming verse, is he says that the cause for samsara, Shankara's, one of his favorite expressions, is anadi avidya. Avidya, ignorance, which is anadi, beginningless. Beginningless ignorance. So if the cause for bondage is beginningless ignorance, how long have you been in a state of bondage? Without beginning. That is, there have been an infinite series of prior lives. In all of those prior lives, you have been in a state of ignorance. Now we come into this life, and there's some glimmer of hope that this anadi avidya, in fact, interest, just one quick comment before we jump back into our text. Avidya is unique, because even though it has no beginning, it has an end. Nothing else in the universe is like that. Anything else that's beginningless is endless, without exception. This universe is beginningless, or the cycle of universes is beginningless. So therefore it is endless. Basically, anything, just a little bit of philosophy, anything that begins ends. Makes sense. But that also suggests that anything that didn't begin should never end. And that applies universally with one exception. This very mysterious thing, which is our subject matter for today, the very mysterious thing we're discussing, previously we used in the text, we saw the word maya being used. Now we're using the word avidya or ajnana, ignorance. This maya or avidya or ajnana is a very mysterious thing. And one of its unique traits is that even though it is anadi, beginningless, it comes to an end. And that's your experience. That's not philosophical, really. In your own experience, ignorance comes to an end. even in worldly matter, did you, if you're ignorant of the Chinese language, when did that ignorance begin? Even your ignorance of the Chinese language is beginningless. So anadi avidya comes to an end, and it can come to an end whenever knowledge takes place. So our discussion, and all of this is to introduce the current verse and the several verses which are answering the question, katam eshaha agataha, how did this bondage come about? Not how did ignorance come about. Ignorance is anadi. Ignorance didn't come about. How did bondage come about? That's our question. So let's return to the verses. Akhanda nitya dvaya bodha shaktya, akhanda nitya dvaya bodha shaktya, spurantam atmanam ananta vaibhavam, spurantam atmanam ananta samavranotya vriti shaktiresha, samavranotya vriti shaktiresha, tamo mayi rahuri varka bimbam, tamo mayi rahuri varka. We'll start in the second line. Spurantam atmanam ananta vaibhavam. So we want to explain, Shankara here wants to explain to us, how did this condition of bondage arise? Recognizing that ignorance didn't arise, there's no beginning for ignorance. How did this condition of bondage arise? So the bondage is with regard to atmanam. So this atma, this true self, Satchidananda atma, the consciousness by which your mental activities are known. By the way, that's not a concept, right? This is your present reality. When we're talking about atma, you've heard me point this out many times. I'm going to continue because this is something everyone misses. It's a very common mistake, and that is we listen in a very theoretical, abstract way. Atmanam. Atma is not an abstract concept. Atma is the one who knows what's happening in your mind right now. That's the best definition. Atma is the one who knows what's happening in your mind right now. What about that Atma? Ananta vaibhavam. That Atma, which you think is very ordinary, Sri Shankara points out that it is ananta, boundaryless, infinite. Vaibhavam, all-pervasive, vast, powerful. Ananta vaibhavam atmanam. You think it's ordinary. The ancient rishis didn't think it's ordinary. Sri Shankaracharya didn't think it's ordinary. And of course, that's what Vedanta is about, to discover the true nature of that consciousness. You take it as being ordinary, that is due to ignorance. We'll see that as we continue. So that atmanam, that true self, which is ananta vaibhavam, which is limitless and all-pervasive, spurantam, it shines. It shines in the sense that it's illumining whatever is happening in your mind right now. Right now, your ears are picking up my words, your eyes are picking up the scene around you, etc. All of that information is conveyed to your mind, and in your mind, a flurry of activity takes place as a result. That flurry of activity taking place in your mind is revealed by consciousness. That consciousness is Atma. It's revealing the thoughts and activities in your mind, spurantam, shining, revealing. How does it do so? And that's what the first line says, akhanda nitya advaya bodha shaktya. Atma does, atma shines, atmanam spurantam, atma shines. How? Bodha shaktya. This first line is one long compound. And as I've mentioned before, we usually need to go right to left to get a good meaning for these compounds. So, that atmanam spurantam, that atma is shining, how? Bodha shaktya, due to bodha shakti. Shakti, the power of bodha, knowing, the power of knowing, the power of consciousness. A very common term used is chit shakti. Chit Shakti and Bodha Shakti are synonyms. They mean the same thing. The power of consciousness. Now, it's a good term if you understand it properly. We think of power as a very tangible kind of thing. You know, there's electric power making the lights shine. There's physiological power allowing you to grasp things, etc. So we think of power in very concrete terms. When we use this term Shakti with Bodha or Chit, when we're speaking of Chit Shakti or Bodha Shakti, it's not a power in that sense. In fact, here's an interesting observation. You could say Bodha Shakti, you could simply say Bodha. Is there any change in meaning? The power of consciousness or consciousness? The power of consciousness means what? Consciousness. And nothing but consciousness. That consciousness has the capacity to reveal what's happening in your mind. Watch this. If consciousness has the capacity to reveal what's happening in your mind, is there some other kind of consciousness that doesn't have the capacity to reveal what's happening in your mind? There's no such thing. There is only consciousness, and that consciousness happens to have the power, Shakti, to reveal what's happening in your mind. So don't get thrown by this word Shakti. Bodha Shakti or Chit Shakti, the power of consciousness, simply means consciousness. Consciousness is a power, but not a power in a tangible sense. It's the capacity to reveal what's happening in your mind, and of course that capacity is your essential nature. Okay, Bodha Shakti. What about that Bodha Shakti? Atmanam Sphurantam, Atma shines. How? Due to this Bodha Shakti, this power of consciousness, which is Advaya, we'll go from right to left, which is non-dual. There's no your consciousness and my consciousness. Remember the bucket example? One sun shining in many buckets, one consciousness manifest in many minds, wherever there's a sentient being, one consciousness. So therefore, Advaya, not two. You might wonder, did you ever wonder why they use the term Advaya instead of Eka? Why not Eka Bodha Shakti? Why Advaya? Why do we call this Advaita Vedanta? Why do we not call it Eka Vedanta? There's an important reason for this, and the reason is if there's one, there's a possibility of two, three, four, five, and six, right? One is generally followed by two, three, four, five, and six. Like, for example, if we say there's one God, well, what about another God? And a third God, and a fourth God, and a fifth God? Which is why my guru likes to say, not one God, only God, to correct that sense. Because if you have one God, there's a possibility of more than one God. Similarly, if there is one Atma, there's theoretically the possibility of a second, third, fourth, and fifth, which is why this term Advaya is used, not two, not dual. Advaita Vedanta, Advaya Brahma, Advaya Atma, not two. So this consciousness, this Bodha Shakti, this consciousness is Advaya. It's not dual, which means one and only one consciousness, manifest in all minds. It is Nitya. Nitya, literally eternal, but eternal in the sense of, the word eternal suggests two very important facts. Eternal means unborn and uncreated. That's what Nitya means. You remember the joke? This is actually my guru's joke, right? He says, Nitya, eternal, is not like styrofoam. That's his joke. We think of Nitya as something which lasts a really long time. Like styrofoam, you put it in the landfill, it'll be there centuries from now. So he actually dislikes the word eternal. Because the English word eternal conjures an image of something that's around for a really, really long time. Even though eternal is a conventional translation for nitya, it might be more accurate then to say uncreated. Nitya does not mean uncreated. Ajam. Ajam means uncreated, unborn. But the implication of nitya, twofold implication. One is uncreated. Second, unchanging. Wow. Unchanging is a whole other thing. Why unchanging? Because if something changes, it stops being what it used to be. If it stops being what it used to be, how can you say it's nitya? It stopped being that. It changed into something else. So nitya, if you merely translate it as eternal, you miss out on so much. Unborn, unchanging. Uncreated and unchanging. What are we referring to? The consciousness by which this moment is known. The consciousness by which you know what's happening right now, that consciousness uncreated, that consciousness unchanging. Your mind is changing, thoughts are changing, vrittis constantly change. You are that unchanging consciousness by which all the changing mental vrittis are known. Okay. And one more adjective is here, akanda. Akanda, partless, undivided. There's a common English word which is technically correct, it just doesn't sound very good. Homogeneous. No, homogeneous is technically, it's a correct term. Akanda, partless, undivided, homogeneous. The problem is when I think of homogeneous, I think of milk, homogenized milk. And that Atma is not like homogenized milk. Okay. But it means, the idea is that in homogenized milk, you don't have the cream at the top and the other milk on the bottom. It's all one and the same. A Sanskrit term, which is much, I think, more accurate, is ekarasa. That which has one essence, one and the same essence, ekarasa. Homogenized milk is the same on the top and on the bottom of the container, ekarasa. In the same way, Atma, Chaitanya, consciousness, is the same here, there. You can't really speak of locations, but in any context, in any time, any place, any manner, Atma is always the same. There are no parts, there are no divisions, there's no contrast between one part and the other. All of that is suggested by this word, akanda. So, the first half of the verse refers to Atma, Atmanam, which is Ananta Vaibhavam, which is boundaryless and all-pervasive, which Spurantam shines, revealing mental activities, with its Bodha Shakti, with its power of consciousness, which is Advaya, non-dual, Nitya, unborn, unchanging, and Akanda, partless. Now, that, to enter the real essence of this verse, is in the second half. The question, katam eshaha agata, how did this bondage come about? Consider the dilemma. We're talking about the consciousness which is present right now in your experience, yet something about that consciousness is unknown. As I said before, you think it's ordinary. Sri Shankaracharya and the rishis think it's extraordinary. By the way, who do you think is right? Okay, so if we admit, well, maybe I'm wrong. All these great saints and sages, for how many years? For hundreds and thousands of years, they've gone on saying the same teaching, that the Atma that you think is ordinary is absolutely extraordinary. But here's the key. That extraordinary consciousness is present right now in this ordinary experience. If that extraordinary consciousness is present right now, then why don't we experience its extraordinary nature, or better said, why don't we recognize immediately the extraordinary nature of consciousness? Well, now we're talking about ignorance. How did this bondage come? This bondage came due to ignorance. And that's what this verse says. Esha, look at the third line at the end. Esha avriti shaktihi. Esha, this. This what? Avriti shakti. This shakti, this power of avriti. We've used the term avarana before. Remember that term, avarana? We use that along with one other term, vikshepa, to talk about the nature of ignorance. Let me just put this up on the board just so we can get oriented. In prior classes, we've discussed the fact that avidya, actually the first discussion was actually about maya, then we branched off into avidya. This maya or avidya, the Sanskrit term is dvishaktimat. It has two powers, two capacities, two kinds of shakti. What kind of shakti? It has avarana shakti and vikshepa shakti. This is crucial to understanding how does bondage take place. It takes place due to ignorance. Ignorance which has these two shaktis, avarana shakti and vikshepa shakti. You remember the meaning of these terms. Avarana shakti means the capacity to cover, to hide, to veil something, to prevent you from seeing it as it truly is. And then a second shakti of ignorance is vikshepa shakti. Vikshepa means projection. So these are the simple meanings. Avarana shakti means the power of covering. And vikshepa shakti means the power of projection. And just to illustrate this using the famous example of the rope snake, Raju Sarpa. Why do you become frightened in that dark alley when you see the snake? There's no snake there. But what happens is the rope is covered. Avarana. Covered by what? Covered by darkness. Darkness of ignorance is the metaphor. So first the rope is covered by darkness. If the rope were not covered by darkness, would you project a snake? No. But the rope is covered by darkness. Actually, technically speaking, partially covered. If the rope were completely covered by darkness, you won't see a snake. In the same way, consciousness is partially covered by ignorance. If consciousness were fully covered by ignorance, you would say, I'm unconscious. Right? But you say, no, I'm conscious. I'm a conscious being. But I don't recognize that consciousness as being extraordinary, as it truly is, Satchidananda. So that consciousness which is present in your experience right now is partially covered. Notice the snake is partially covered by darkness. And then a second part comes, is the vikshepa. When the rope is partially covered by darkness, then vikshepa takes place. You project the snake. In the same way, atma is partially covered by ignorance, avarana shakti. And then that gives the opportunity for vikshepa to take place. Vikshepa, by the way, is the next verse. So we'll hold off that discussion until the next verse. Let's see this one. So that spurantam atmanam, that extraordinary consciousness which is shining and revealing all the mental activities. What about that consciousness? Esha avriti shaktihi. This capacity for covering, avriti shaktihi. Avriti is a synonym for avarana. They mean the same thing. So this capacity for covering, samavranoti, breaking the words apart. Samavranoti, it covers. It covers what? Atmanam. We have to connect all the words properly here. Esha avriti shaktihi, this capacity for covering, samavranoti, covers. What does it cover? Atmanam, which we discussed in the prior half of the verse. How is it that this capacity of ignorance is able to do that covering? Because this avriti shaktihi is tamomayi. It is of the nature of darkness. The nature of darkness. There's our metaphor. Why is it that you see the snake in the dark alley? You don't see the snake in the well-lit alley. So tamomayi, the nature of darkness, that which can conceal. So this concealing factor, this avarana shakti, it partially conceals atma, and that is the cause for bondage. Consciousness is already present. Satchidananda Atma is as present now as it can ever be. For a Brahmajnani, consciousness is no more present than it is for you. There's absolutely no difference whatsoever. What is the difference is for you, perhaps, that consciousness is covered by this avarana shakti, and that leads then to bondage. Of course, the bondage we'll see more in when we get to the next verse with vikshepa. Now, finally, there's a metaphor given here, a drishtanta, about this covering. It's covered. So this spurantam atmanam, this shining consciousness, which we call atma, is covered by this avarana shakti, by this covering capacity of ignorance, which is tamomayi, which is of the nature of darkness. And this covering takes place just like rahuhu eva arkabimbam. Arka, sun. Arkabimba, the disk of the sun. Arkabimba. So arkabimba, the disk of the sun, gets covered during an eclipse. Now it turns out in ancient times they didn't quite understand our solar system properly. In particular, they didn't understand the transit of the moon properly. So instead of saying the moon is what, of course we understand during a solar eclipse, it's the moon that covers the disk of the sun. They didn't quite get that right. Of course, they didn't have telescopes and all the modern things that we take for granted today. So they posited another celestial entity that they called Rahu. Like a celestial snake, not exactly, but it's kind of described like a snake, where Rahu is the head of the snake and Ketu is the tail. This is the mythology that evolved to... By the way, even though they didn't get the moon part right, they could predict exactly when these eclipses would happen. Go figure. That they had. They could, with their astrology, Jyotish Shastra, they could predict exactly when these eclipses would take place. They didn't quite understand the relationship of the moon. So they had Rahu would come and cover the sun. So this metaphor is given, Rahuhu Eva, just like Rahu covers the disk of the sun, in the same way ignorance, in particular avarana shakti, covers, as it were, consciousness. Now, before we leave this aside, there's two things to see here. When Rahu, or when the moon, covers the sun, does the sun stop shining? The sun goes on shining. When ignorance covers Atma, does Atma stop revealing the activities of your mind? Certainly not. Not only that, but when Rahu or the moon covers the sun, Does it cover the sun so completely that you think there is no sun? No. You can make out, even in a full eclipse, you can make out that band of light around. Did you ever see a full eclipse? You get this ring of light around the darkened disk. So even though the sun is eclipsed, you still see some of the sun, which means the sun is partially obscured, not totally obscured. Just as we said before, consciousness is partially covered by ignorance, not fully covered, just like the snake. The rope is partially covered by darkness. One last point, and this is actually drawn from modern science. How big is the sun? Big. I think, I don't remember they use numbers like, you could fit maybe dozens of Earths across the diameter of the sun. Don't quote me on this because I get a lot of the details wrong, but if this is the sun, this would be the Earth. And I don't know what the number is, maybe some 18 diameters or some number, but this is kind of that. And how big is the moon? Even smaller, right? But notice that tiny moon is big enough to obscure this giant sun. Of course, you can understand how and why that takes place. You've probably seen pictures in some book where you got this giant sun, and you've got this Earth, and then you've got this moon, which is just big enough. When you're standing here, this moon. I got to draw it a little bigger. It's just big enough to obscure the moon. So even though the moon obscured the sun. So even though the moon is quite small, it succeeds in covering up this giant sun. The metaphor, this obviously is not an ancient metaphor because we're drawing on modern science. We're not using Rahu to explain this. The metaphor, I would suggest, is that just as the moon is small and insignificant, but it's good enough to cover this vast sun, in the same way, ignorance is not real. Yet, it's real enough to partially cover consciousness. So this metaphor is meant to suggest that the covering factor is not such a big thing. And in this case, ignorance is not real. If ignorance were real, you could never get rid of it. Our definition of real is that which never goes away. That which wasn't born, that which doesn't change, that which doesn't go away, doesn't get destroyed. If ignorance were real, you'd be stuck with it. Ignorance is not real. That's what this moon metaphor is meant to suggest. Okay, so this verse, then, describes the avarana shakti, which covers atma. And in the next verse, we go on to talk about vikshepa shakti. Tiro bhute swatmani Tiro bhute swat amalatara tejovati puman amalate jovati puman anatmanam mohad anatmanam ahamati shariram kalayati ahamati shariram kalayati tatah kama krodha Tatah kamak prabhrati bhirhamum bandhagunaihi prabhrati bhirhamum bandhanagunaihi param vikshepakhya rajasa param vikshepakhya rajasa urushaktir vyatayati urushaktir vyatayati these longer meters that Sri Shankaracharya uses here allows more sophisticated ideas to be communicated. Notice that in the Bhagavad Gita, for example, most of the verses are in this very short meter, having only 8 syllables in a line. If you only got 32 syllables to work with, you can only say so much in a verse. Here, you can see the very long meter that we have. And with that very long meter, then, much more complicated, subtle, and complex ideas can be conveyed. Now, you can usually assume that's happening when you see a longer meter like this. All right. Tirobhute swatmani. Swa-atmani, swa-atma, one's own self, one's own true self, Satchidananda atma. Tirobhute, tirobhuta means covered. Tirobhuta, I can't think of a better translation. That which is covered up is tirobhuta. And they're both in a locative case, which means you translate it in this way, tirobhute atmani, when Atma is covered. Tirobhute Atmani. When Atma is covered, how is Atma covered? In the prior verse we saw, due to the avarana shakti of avidya, due to the covering capacity of ignorance. Tirobhute Swatmani. When Atma is covered, amlatara tejovati. Again in the locative case. So talk an adjective talking about that Atma. Atma which is Tejovati, which is possessed of tejas, light, shining. Tejovati, that shining Atma, which is amala, untainted. Amala, amala chit, untainted consciousness. Your consciousness is untainted by all of your thoughts. No matter how impure your thoughts are, consciousness is pure. No matter how agitated your mental state might be, consciousness is not agitated. By the way, when you're agitated, how do you know you're agitated? You are the witness of the agitation present in your mind. You are the conscious observer of the agitation in your mind. You are the unchanging observer of the agitation in your mind. That's what amla here means, untainted. So amla tejovati. Amla tejovati swatmani tirobhute. When that shining, untainted consciousness is covered. When that shining, untainted consciousness, which is your own true self, is covered, then what? Puman, a person, anatmanam mohat ahamiti shariram kalayati. Puman, a person, kalayati, considers shariram, the body. And by the way, sharira, body, can refer to stula sharira or sukshma. Sharira doesn't specify, which means both. So body, meaning the subtle body, the mind and senses, etc., the prana, all of that that makes the physical body alive, sukshma sharira and stula sharira, physical body, both. So puman, a person, kalayati, considers shariram, the subtle body and the physical body, which are anatmam. They're not atma. It's not you, it's a thing, it's something. Remember our definition, if it's known to you, how can it be you? It's simple. Anything known to you is not you. The example I've given, the table is known, not me. The chair is known, not me. The body is known, not me. The emotions are known, not me. The thoughts are known, not me. Therefore, anatmam. It is anatma, the body, the subtle body and physical body, which are anatmanam. Sorry, I got the wrong ending. Anatmanam, the physical body and subtle body, which are anatmanam, not me, Aham ut iti kalayati. It's considered aham iti. It's considered I. Thus, this is me. The body, subtle body, and physical body are considered aham iti. Aham is our first person pronoun. I, considered I. It would be just like, you know, this body is me. The mind is me. Sounds reasonable. The chair is me. The table is me. Doesn't sound so reasonable. To me, they're all that. They're equally, and to me, as far as I'm concerned, it's as reasonable to say I am a table as it is to say I am this body. And just to make it more real, this chair is maroon, this body is white. The maroonness belongs to the chair, the whiteness belongs to the body, therefore I'm not white. I'm not male. I'm not getting older. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm any more than I'm the characteristics of this chair. Anyway, enough said. Anatmanam. But aham iti kalayati. It's considered to be me. And you'd think, how ridiculous it is. If I were to say, I am maroon, you'd think, what is wrong with Swamiji? But if I say, I'm white, you think that's reasonable? No. Mohat. All of this is due to ignorance. In fact, moha, delusion. Very strong word. Out of delusion, mohat. Puman kalayati, a person considers that anatmanam shariram, the physical and subtle body, which is an object, aham iti. Kalayati is considered to be me. This is definitely mohat, due to delusion, due to massive confusion. It is all error. Error, an erroneous conclusion. Right? An erroneous conclusion. That's step two. First, make a connection up here. This bandha, remember we're answering the question, katam bandha agataha. How did we get into this bondage? It's a two-step process. You don't do it all at once. It's a two-step process. What are the two steps? First step is due to this avarana shakti. There is self non-recognition. That's step one. By the way, if we stopped at step one, it wouldn't be so bad. That is, if I said, I don't know who I am, but I'm okay. There wouldn't be any problem. I don't know myself as Satchidananda Atma. In fact, this is really a condition of total ignorance, and as we say in American English, ignorance is bliss. So someone who's utterly ignorant is potentially blissful. Non-recognition of the self doesn't in and of itself cause suffering. Bondage means suffering. There's no suffering due to non-recognition. There's a second step, which is this vikshepa shakti. And here, instead of using the Sanskrit language, so I'm saying here, self-non-recognition using English, how about we put some English on here? What kind of vikshepa? What kind of projection? Erroneous. Oops, that's not spelled right. Erroneous. Is that right? Spelling? Erroneous. Conclusion. Step one, self non-recognition, leads to step two, erroneous conclusion, obviously about yourself. I am this body. This body is defective, therefore I am defective. I am this mind. This mind has thousands of problems, therefore I have thousands of problems. you can see how it's the second step, this erroneous conclusion, or in Sanskrit we call that vikshepa, projection, and this is the origin of suffering. But then again, can this erroneous conclusion take place without the self-non-recognition? So self-non-recognition, avarana, is a necessary precursor to the erroneous conclusion, the vikshepa. So this is our two-step process of getting into this condition we call bandha, bondage. All right. And that's described here very nicely in the second half. Tataha, so the first half says that atma, a paraphrase, the limitless shining self being obscured by ignorance, since that's so, a person considers oneself to be the body, mind, and senses, even though they're not I. Tataha, then, and here's our sequence. Tataha, then, a sequence begins, and what happens in the sequence? Jump to the last line. Vikshepa akya. There's our word vikshepa. Vikshepa akya. That which is called vikshepa, the vikshepa shakti that we're talking about here. So that vikshepa shakti, what does it do? It vyatayati. The verb comes at the end of that line. Vikshepa shakti vyatayati. Tortures. That's an accurate translation. Vyatayati can mean like irritates or agitates, troubles, but let's give it the weight it deserves. Tortures. Vikshepa shakti, vikshepa akya, that which we call vikshepa, which is uru shaktihi, not just the shakti. Shakti means power. Uru shakti, this incredible power, this overwhelming power, this fierce power, uru. This fierce power, uru shakti. And what kind of power is it? It is rajasaha uru shaktihi. It is this incredible power derived from rajas. Notice avarana shakti was related to tamas. If we go to our structure of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, so avarana shakti is definitely related to tamo guna, tamas. And here, this vikshepa shakti is related to rajas. Rajasaha, from rajas, arises this uru shaktihi, this fearsome power. This fearsome power, vikshepa akya, by name, it is called Vikshepa Shakti. And what does it do? It vyatayati. It tortures. It tortures whom? In the middle of the top line, amum. Amum is a pronoun, him, a person. It tortures that person. How much? Param. That you have to, all these words are scattered around. Param, tremendously, greatly. It greatly tortures amum, a person. And how does vikshepa shakti torture you? And Sri Shankara says very clearly here, how does vikshepa shakti torture you? Kama krodha prabruttihi bandha gunaihi. It tortures you with its bandhana gunas, with its qualities of bondage. What are the qualities of bondage? Kama, krodha, prabruti. Prabruti means etc. Ityadi. Kama, krodha, and you can add as many on to that as you want. So desire, anger, greed, delusion, whatever words you want to add, all of that is what tortures us. Again, if you had a perfect mind and a perfect body, no problem. Every body is imperfect, every mind is imperfect, therefore identification with the body and mind means that we're stuck with this kama and krodha, and this is what vyatayati tortures us. So, the second half then is tataha, then, this vikshepa akya, this vikshep, that which is called vikshepa shakti, which is uru shakti, this fierce, powerful, fearsome shakti, rajasaha, that arises from rajoguna. What about it? It yatayati, it tortures us with these bandhana gunas, with its capacity to, it makes us identify, bandhana guna, it makes us identify with the qualities of the body and mind. Problem with this word guna, we translate it as quality. Many times in English, quality is a good thing, right? You want something of high quality. But here, quality doesn't, it's not a value judgment. Here, quality, better to translate guna here as characteristic. You do understand, we translate this guna as quality, but then we have this problem with English. Quality means something good. Tamoguna is a quality, not a good quality. So better, instead of translating guna as quality, maybe better to translate it as characteristic. So, what is the bandhana guna, the characteristics of bondage? The characteristics of bondage is the suffering that arises when we identify with the body and mind. The problems of the sthula and sukshma sharira become your problems. And in this way, vikshepa shakti vyatayati tortures you. Very powerful verb here, vyatayati, to torture. So this is the second step, vikshepa shakti. And then this is summarized in this next verse. This next verse is also the end of the answer to the question. How did this bondage come about? So we have these three verses answering that question, and we'll conclude with this third and final verse. Etabhyam heva shaktibhyam, etabhyam heva bandha humsa samagataha, bandha humsa samayabhyam vimohito deham, yabhyam vimohito deham, matvatmanam brahmatyayam, matvatmanam brahmatyayam. Etabhyam eva shaktibhyam. Yam is one of the unique endings in Sanskrit that indicates a dual number. Etabhyam, due to these two what? Shaktibhyam, due to these two shaktis. What shaktis are we talking about? Avarana and vikshepa shakti. Etabhyam eva shaktibhyam, eva indeed, due to these two shaktis, bandaha pumsaha, pumsaha for a person, bandaha, bondage, samagataha takes place, comes. For a person, bondage comes, etabhyam shaktibhyam, due to these. Both are required. So we said before, if there were no avarana, there couldn't be vikshepa, right? So vikshepa depends on avarana. And if there were no vikshepa, there's no problem. We said, if you're a bliss, what is the English term? Blissful idiot. That term is used. A blissful idiot is one who has lots of avarana and no vikshepa. Blissful idiot. So both are required. Avarana supports vikshepa, and it's vikshepa that actually leads to the suffering. So therefore, this bondage comes. Bandaha samagataha. Bondage occurs. Pumsaha for a person. Etabhyam shaktibhyam. Due to these two shaktis, avarana vikshepa. Yabhyam vimohitaha. Vimohita, actually, the subject is at the very end, ayam. You see that brahmati? Ayam. Ayam, this person, a person, ayam. A person who is vimohitaha, who is deluded, who is confused, yabhyam, by these two, by avarana vikshepa shakti, a person who is deluded by these two, what about that person? Deham matva, matva, considering, deham, body, And again, it can be stula deha or sukshma deha. Both can be implied here. So deham matva, considering the physical body and subtle body, considering them to be atmanam, to be oneself, due to ignorance, considering the physical body and subtle body, matva, considering them to be atmanam, oneself. What about that person? Brahmati. It's an interesting choice of verbs. Because brahmati usually means wanders. So a person wanders through life, identifying with the body, mind, and senses, and therefore subject to suffering in a state of bondage. One wanders in a state of bondage. But this brahmati has a double meaning. From the root brahm, brahm meaning to wander, from the root brahm comes a noun which you probably know, brahma. Brahma meaning error. Error, ignorance. By the way, you want to be a little careful with pronunciation. Please don't confuse these words. But it's just a matter of moving that H a little bit. You move that H a little bit and the meaning changes completely. So this Brahma comes from a root which means to be big, to be expansive, to be limitless. This Brahma, which means error, comes from this root brahm, meaning to wander. This is an interesting connection. What is the connection between error and wandering? Well, if you have a destination in mind and you wander off path, like if you don't have a GPS in your car and you wander off from your selected destination, that's called Brahma, error, a mistake. So here, Brahmati can mean wanders. I am bandha wander. That I am this person who is in a state of bondage, wanders. But the hidden meaning or the subtle meaning is this person wanders from truth. You wander away from reality, you wander away from truth. By the way, in life, when you wander away from your destination, is that a good thing or not so good thing? It leads to trouble, difficulty, and misery. And here, when we wander from reality, when we wander from truth, the truth, to use some loose language, the truth of your own inner divinity. When you wander from the truth of that own, of your inner divinity, and not just your inner divinity, everyone else's. When you lose sight of that truth, Brahma, due to error, then what happens to our lives? The quality of life, one falls into this condition we call bandha, bondage, and one is subject then to all kinds of misery. This misery then is due to this Brahma, wandering in a state of ignorance. All right. So this concludes then the fourth of our questions. Kaha, what was that? Katam. Katam eshaha agataha. How did this bondage take place? When we meet next time, we'll come to the fifth of the questions, which is katam pratishtaha. How does this bondage continue? What is it that keeps it going? Why do you wake up every day and struggle again and again and again? So that'll be the fifth question, which we'll see in our next class. Okay, we'll conclude the third prayer.